Thank you for tuning in. This is Matt Santos of the Mile High Show. You are listening to episode number 124, and this was an enjoyable one. I sat down today with Dave Manning, who, if you listened to last week's, we talked a little bit about him on my solo podcast, but the intro music of last week was some of Dave Manning's work. That was also what you heard leading into today's episode from Dave Manning Road Trip Songs. He's got three CDs out, including Road Trip Songs, Vincent Rolls, and what's the other one? I got it right here. A Mobile Home Girl, which is all three of these are great compilations of his storytelling and his travels around the country. And today you'll be able to listen to my conversation with David, where he talks a little bit about that and how he travels in his beautiful, beautiful mid-60s VW microbus. That bus is actually a part of him, a character in his stories. And it was a pleasure sitting down with David. We were talking at the Raven Cafe. Check out the link for the Raven's Facebook page right there in our show notes. The Raven's a great spot to do everything from just sitting and enjoying the beautiful scenery on Cortez Street right off the row, Whiskey Row in Prescott. Great food, great beverages, and up in through the night. They are open for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, as well as late night beverages and food as you listen to some of the greatest music in our area, including Dave Manning, who was playing there the night before. He periodically plays at the Raven. I believe he said this is his 10th year playing with them. They are the folks over at the Raven are huge supporters of both the Mile High Show by letting us hang out there and taking care of us when we're there, and also of the artists, both visual and audio artists, the music, and the Raven Studio, which helps so many local musicians record and preserve their music. So check out the Raven Cafe. Check out Dave Manning at davemanning.net, where you can also have links to some of his downloads and get some samplings of his music, and of course order his CDs, including Road Trip Songs, Mobile Home Girl, and Vincent Rolls. Today is also brought to you by BarkBox. I am very excited to be partnered up with BarkBox. If you are not familiar with BarkBox, they were established in 2011, and they are, as their text says, BarkBox is committed to making dogs happy. They supply toys, chew toys, treats, naturally made treats, and they also are concerned with the welfare of pets of all kinds by supporting and donating to shelters and rescues and nonprofits around the country. Again, they have a system where you can order and have delivered right to your home 4 to 6 natural treats and super fun toys curated around the surprise theme each month. For dogs, BarkBox is like the joy of a million belly scratchers. And you can get a free month of service from BarkBox by using the link right there on our homepage at milehighshow.com, or go to getbarkbox.com/milehigh. Again, right there at milehighshow.com, there's a link right on the homepage, or go to getbarkbox.com/milehigh as a way to make your four-legged friend happy and support our show at the same time. So please do so. Don't forget, you also have the opportunity to use that Audible link and the Amazon link at the homepage too. But especially this month, getbarkbox.com/milehigh for your extended free trial of a month free of tricks and treats and toys for your pet. So sit back and enjoy my talk with Dave Manning from the Raven Cafe.
One more bit.
tell me where folks can find out about you and find out where you're performing.
Well, to find out where they're performing is a little trickier because I don't always post those up. Sometimes on the I'll put them up on the Facebook, usually.
Yeah.
So there's two Dave Manning Facebooks, and I don't know. Anyway, I'll just put them up on the... So the Facebooks, so friend me on search. Facebook. That's a good way to find out where I'm playing. And DaveManning.net is to get everything else. Gotcha. Get everything else. I don't put the dates on there because I just not that organized.
Links, you've got links to your social media on your Facebook on there, I believe, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. My web guy's pretty good about all that.
One of the things that... right off the bat, the first thing that caught my eye, I saw a post. I don't know if it was yours or if it was direct from Thumb Butte, but it was from your show. It was announcing your show last week at Thumb Butte, where I first sat down and was able to listen to you. Very first thing that caught my eye was that bus.
Oh yeah,
and that seems to be. And then I kind of go, okay, I got to look at what this guy's doing. I love the bus. It's an integral character to some of your songs, to your between song patter and your dialogue with your audience. Tell me a little bit about. About
the bus. Yeah, the bus is more famous than I am. That's for sure. Yeah. I bought that bus, ever since I was a kid, right? I love being on road trips, like the family road trips in the summertime. Like, I just, the whole just being on the road sort of thing. And that's, I love that. And so when I was in high school and I just graduated, I'm going to buy a car. I want something I can go on road trips in, man. And I looked at a few cars and then saw this ad for a Volkswagen bus. And my buddy had one of my high school buddies had one. I'm like, oh, those things are cool. You can go on road trips in those. So I went and looked at it. And it turned out the guy selling it was an acquaintance of my dad's.
Oh, gotcha.
And so I went over and looked at it. And then my dad came over and looked at it, a second time. And I was like, okay. And he was asking $1,200 for it.
What?
Well, this was back in 1991 when they weren't worth much money.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
And, oh, my God.
And the motor wasn't that great at the time. And so, and I said, I was going to be Mr. Shrewd. I never bought a car before. So I said, would you take $850? And he said, how about $800?
That's backwards.
Yeah, and I think the look on my face was worth the $50. Because he's like, look, man, I paid $800 for it. I've got a year out of it. Take it. Get out of here. He said, don't drive it any further than you want to tow it home. That's what he said.
And how many miles have you got on it?
when I bought it, I think it had 76,000 miles on it, which is pretty low even for that time.
Yeah.
And then now it's got 450-some thousand
miles. What year is it?
That's a 65.
65. I've got a number of years on you. When I was in junior high, my dad had a VW Beetle.
Okay.
It was a 71 or 72, I forget. He bought it brand new. And when he retired it, he gave it to my brother, my older brother. So I was like in junior high, that was my brother's car. It was beautiful Beetle. And it didn't last too long. He sold it, got a 59 Beetle, a 63 Beetle, and then when I was in high school, I went through a 59, I had a 61, I had a 64, 65. I had about seven or eight of them over the years.
Wow.
Loved the Beetles. Couldn't find buses. This is in the San Francisco Bay Area. Couldn't find buses, but we always wanted one, both me and my brother both. But I was picking these things up for a couple $100. You'd see them rusting out in somebody's yard.
Yeah, yeah.
A couple of $100, you'd get them.
Yeah, yeah. They were just everywhere, and they weren't worth much.
And then at some point, and I don't know when, I was kicking myself for not holding on to any of them. I've ran into a couple out here that have literally had trees growing through them, rusted out, no engines in them. And people are going, oh, yeah, I'm looking to get rid of it cheap. I only want $2,500 for it. It's like, what?
Yeah, just
for a shell.
Yeah, just
but
a.
There's a Beetle out in Chino right now for sale. I think and it's in good shape. I think they want like $5,000 for it or something.
Yeah, that's about what they go for now, which is okay. Yeah,
you can't afford it.
At least it's not the buses. Yeah, the buses are astronomical now. Yeah, so I paid $800 for my bus.
Yeah.
And it was in running shape. Like I said, the motor was about to go out.
Yeah.
And it's in probably roughly a little bit better shape than it was then, but it's got more miles on it. I don't know.
Yeah.
But now it's probably worth it way more than 8,000. It's probably worth like between 20 and 30,000.
Oh my goodness.
Now which is ridiculous.
How do you have that set up? Because that's your
that's
tour bus, right? That's your house.
Yeah, yeah. So
how do you got it set up?
it's a what's called a Sundial camper. So it's very similar to the regular Westphalia campers that they made, but Sundial made them in the States. And so it was. So anyway, yeah, back seat that looks like a couch, and then you give it a yank, and it folds out into a full size bed. So your feet go by the back window. And I got a sink, and I've got a 2-burner Coolman stove that I just fill up off the gas tank by unplugging the fuel line from the carburetor. I stick it in the tank of the stove and fill it up, and then plug it back into the carburetor. And that's I keep it pretty simple.
Yeah,
and you're right that some of my songs either mention the bus or just mention being on the road, because I guess I've been doing this, living in the bus and traveling around for, I don't know, 6, 7, 8, 9, maybe getting close to 10 years.
Now, you say you got that, you and your dad went and looked at it. Was that your gateway to getting out on the road at that time?
Yeah. Kind of? Yeah. Yeah, that was
on your own performing in that, or
no, I wasn't even doing music at the time. Music was a hobby, like pretty much all through my 20s. Music was kind of just a hobby, and sometimes I'd have a gig on a weekend or something. And then it got to be where I was having paid gigs every weekend,
nice,
and still doing my day job. And then at one point I just got to thinking, and but then my girlfriend dumped me, and I was like, oh well, geez,
you can get half an album out of that.
My need to stay put in one place had greatly declined once that happened. So I was like, you know, I'm having way more fun when I'm traveling around playing music than when I'm working my day job. So
day job?
I was a cameraman for TV.
Really?
So it was a pretty fun day job.
Whereabouts?
But the last place was up in Anchorage, Alaska. Worked up there for 6 years.
Now, what was growing up for you? Where were you? What was home?
Mostly outside of Chicago. My dad worked at a company called Bethlehem Steel that's still there making steel for cars and buildings and whatever else, but right on the south shore of Lake Michigan. So about an hour and a half outside Chicago, now near the town of Gary, Indiana. Gary, Indiana. Well, there's 3 steel mills right on Lake Michigan there.
Industry town.
Yeah.
Now, what was your you were playing music just like as a hobby, just as something to do?
Yeah, because
when did you start doing that?
Well, I played the clarinet all from grade school all the way up through college. And when I was in college, I started writing a lot of poetry and stuff, and then started hearing some Tom Waits stuff and some early Bob Dylan stuff. And I said to myself, I'm like, well, geez, I mean, these are like poems set to music, and neither one of these guys has a particularly melodic voice. And I'm like, well, I could do that. And there was pianos in all the practice rooms at the college, so I just started teaching myself to play the piano, 1 finger at a time, then 2 fingers at a time, and then, you know, got to where I was fussing with the piano and mostly just putting poems to music. And then that gelled into, I think these are songs now.
So clarinet, transition into piano and keyboards, have those been your main? Piano now seems to be the main instrument for
you. Well, my voice is the main instrument. You have to learn to play your voice, just like you have to learn to play an instrument.
Yeah,
because that's all muscle memory stuff, just like working your fingers on the piano is.
I sit down and talk with, I don't know, quite a few of the local musicians. You know, we sit here at the Raven and have done interviews, Birdcage and other places. Most of the guys that travel around are primarily guitarists. They're playing guitar.
That's a little lighter.
I was going to say, what kind? You'd mentioned at Thumb Butte when I was listening, you were playing was that the piano there?
They had a real piano,
You mainly electric?
Yeah, I carry a full-size Roland keyboard with me, and it's nice. It's nice to play, but one of the main reasons that I started playing the piano is just because it's such a big instrument, and it's 500 pounds of wood and strings, and no matter how new or old the piano is, some group of people like had to hand assemble that thing, and when it all vibrates and the wood's all vibrating with the strings and you're playing into it and the whole I just think that's a beautiful, beautiful experience. And that's why I play the piano, and it's unfortunate and a bit emaciating to play on something that's essentially a computer that's sending a signal to an amplifier. So it's not as nice to do that, but I, you know, of course I do it because a lot of places don't have pianos.
And it, you know, you can travel with it in the bus.
Yeah. It's heavier than a guitar, but not.
Yeah.
You can do it. You can carry it around.
I was listening to you talking, and again, that when you're playing, obviously the songs, the stories you're telling, the music is great. I gravitate towards what you're saying in between. I really like that aspect of somebody who can sit down and have a dialogue, kind of build that relationship with the audience just by telling stories. And you were talking about the difference of playing a piano as opposed to an electric keyboard.
Oh, yeah, okay.
The other day. And that, what I kind of was thinking, I mean, in the bag here I got a digital camera. That's pretty much all I use now. But there's something about... periodically I'll pull out my old 35 millimeter and my 2.25 cameras,
yeah,
and load them with film. And there's just something about that exercise of using an older camera,
a real camera,
opposed to, you know, I'll take a lot of shots with my cell phone. I mean, a lot of the stuff I have on Instagram and stuff and on Facebook are shot with my cell phone. It's real convenient.
Yeah.
And they're making them so great nowadays that they look great.
Yeah, yeah. It is.
But I feel almost like I'm cheating. I don't, as opposed to when I pick up an old camera or I'll grab one off the shelf, even if I don't shoot with it, I just hold it and I'm working it with my son. I got a little 7-year-old kid at home, loves playing with my old cameras. I got lines of shelves up with them. It's just something about that. And I got that same feeling how you were talking about the pianos.
Yeah, I learned to take photos on a 35 millimeter, the Pentax K1000, which is trucks, man.
They're great.
Yeah, it's like the Volkswagen Beetle of cameras. Very, just reliable, and it's very simple.
Yeah.
But it's one of those where you what you get out of something is what you put into it. And when you shoot with the film camera, I totally agree that because each shot is going to cost you a dollar or two. By the time you buy the film, the processing, and all the other stuff, it's like you think about it. And the older cameras are tactile, where it's like, you got the little cranks and the little dials.
And you feel the mirror flipping.
Yeah, you're looking through it, and like you're watching your own little movie in the viewfinder, and you take one piece of that little movie. And, so I totally agree. And I think it's a good analogy for playing a wooden piano versus a plastic piano.
Now, for an untrained eye... Some people look and go, you know, well, that picture's better. It's sharper. It's clearer. It's, you know, tack sharp, no grain in it and everything. Yeah, it's a digital, 50 megapixel camera, whatever. Film isn't always perfect. It shows the flaws. Some of my favorite photographs are barely in focus. You know, it's the feeling, the lighting, the mood, the composition.
Yeah.
You can get a perfect pitch sound out of a computer, out of a keyboard.
Oh yeah, I don't have to tune my keyboard, which is actually great.
How it's like when people go back and the resurgence of vinyl, listening to music on vinyl.
Yeah,
you hear the snaps, the pops.
It's more human.
How does that change how you play when you're playing this piano? Which I don't know. How often have you played this specific one at the Raven?
A couple times a year for the last. I don't know, 8 or 10 years.
But it's not something you're playing every day.
No, and I often secretly wish the guitar players had to do that too, where they had to show up at the gig and they just get handed a guitar that they've never played before and be like, okay, cool. And in one sense, you're like, oh, like I almost at the distillery, I was tempted to play my keyboard because the feel of that piano is very different than what I was used to.
Yeah.
But I was like, no, I'm going to make it work. And it made... my show at the distillery unique, in the sense that I had my fingers just wound up playing that instrument differently than they would because I had a much heavier touch. You had to work to play that one, where my keyboard has a much lighter touch.
Like,
and this one's very heavy too. Yeah. The one here at the Raven, it's a really great instrument,
beautiful looking too.
But it's got a, it just takes more pressure to push the keys down.
It's like using an old manual Underwood typewriter, typewriter, or your.
But it makes
laptop.
You play differently, and it's a challenge. And for somebody like me that, I'm playing 3 times this weekend, each gig's about 3 hours. So that's 9 hours of, which I enjoy playing music, don't get me wrong. But it's cool to have something different. Be like, oh, cool, I'm going to play on this piano. How can I make my songs different because of how this piano is working and how it sounds?
Do you work? I don't know if, please take this the right way, but if you hit a clunker on there because of the way that it's laid out or the feel. You just roll that in.
Oh, yeah.
Make it part of the...
You can't stop. You can't stop the song once it's going. That's the thing. Yeah. We learned that early on, you know, playing in, you know, high school band and stuff. You just gotta, keep going, fake it till you make it. You know.
You mentioned Tom Waits. I read he's one of my favorite performers, one of my favorite songwriters. And when I read the description, I believe it's on one of the CDs I picked up the other day. It's got your quote on the back of somebody comparing you to Tom Waits.
Yeah, yeah.
And what was your response to that? Do you remember
Who's
that?
Generally, it's like, I'll take that. Yeah. You know, that's cool. And like I said, when I started out, you know, early Bob Dylan, Tom Waits, I was like, well, this is what I want to be like. Well, that very, it's not musically polished, but it's very expressive.
Yeah. And raw, but emotional.
Yeah, that's exactly it. So it sounds like that's a genuine guy off the street that sat down to play a song on the guitar or on the piano.
Yeah.
And to me, it was really believable, and it really, exactly, emotional. I want to do that.
Yeah.
I think I can do that, and that's what I still try to do.
I've read some interviews and a couple of books about Waits over the years, and one of the things that I love about his interviews and his dialogue is that they're great stories, but you're never quite sure if it's fact or fiction. And I love that about him and about his interviews, even when they're straight interviews. You know, Rolling Stone did one, and you're halfway through it, you're going through, like, I don't know if he's telling a story or telling a tale. But one of the things I read was that when he was first learning to play piano, it was on a piano that was missing some keys, and it was missing, but he just made it work. And he in that specific article I was reading, he attributed his style to that, by making work what worked. So he concentrated more on the story he was telling, as opposed to the technical aspect of playing a
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. And every time, it's rare that I play, when I play at a venue that has a real piano, that it's perfect.
Yeah.
That it's working. It's you know, it's either a little bit out of tune or there's a bum key somewhere. I think the one at the Distillery had a low D. The second D up was just wouldn't work about 70% of the time. When I hit it, it just wouldn't make a sound.
Yeah.
Which I know other folks probably didn't notice, but you're listening to the bass line I'm playing, boom, 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 boom. It's missing a note.
I didn't notice any of it.
My fingers are. Yeah. And this one here at the Raven had one of the high B is out of tune with itself.
Yeah.
Normally they keep this one in really good shape, but, you know, one of the strings must have slipped since they had a tune last.
Yeah.
Well, and you don't use that note very often, but yeah, it's always, you know, a different thing. You learn.
Yeah.
Like, oh, okay, that one, I got to play around the one that's not working. For a long time on my keyboard, the third A up was skeptical. Just sometimes it wouldn't. So you learn to, you play around it.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, telling stories and stuff, like, lately the way I've been thinking about it is, like, don't try to be a musician that's sitting down, like, I'm going to play a song, then I'm going to play another song. Be like a disc jockey.
Yeah.
Like, make your whole thing, like, okay, this song ends, so let's talk about things to lead up into the next song, and then play the next song.
Yeah.
So it's more like you're listening to a radio show.
Yeah, or a theater piece almost. Yeah,
than just somebody playing one song after the other. And if I had, and I wish I could get myself booked in more listening venues.
Yeah.
Because I feel like that is an asset of mine, and it is something I enjoy doing, is like kind of just noodling on the piano and telling
a
story.
When you say listening venues, as opposed to like restaurants, bar type thing, where it's
more like
background music.
Yeah, more like a theater sort of venue.
Nice.
Where like there's nothing else to pay attention to except for Dave on the stage.
Yeah.
Because then when I tell a story, people get it. Whereas, especially if it's a loud bar, there's no point in telling a story, because about halfway through a 5 or 10 minute story, half the people, what the hell, is that guy still talking? Isn't he supposed to be playing music? What's he doing over there? He's still talking about something. I don't know.
See, that's more the performances I gravitate to. I sit down periodically with some of the comics that travel through Phoenix, and we've done some shows out in L.A. where we've gone to the comedy clubs out there to interview folks. And that's one of the great things about podcasting. I'm a comedy fan, but I would much rather listen to these guys talk about their job, talk about the gigs and things. I could hear their routines by picking up their CD. I can see them at the club and watching. I like that. But I want to hear kind of the backstory behind it mixed in. And podcasting's kind of done that. A lot of comics are doing their own podcast. That's like the main funnel for their publicity now is they all have podcasts. Very rarely do they do bits on them. They're more talking about trips to the clubs and struggles coming up. And I really like that aspect. So when I hear, even here on the row, when I go see a musician, I like the music, of course. That's why I'm there. But I want to hear that interaction because if I just want to hear the music, I'll pick up the CD and I'll listen to it in the car. I want to sit there and learn about the person, hear their stories, hear the dialogue like you do. And too often it's not that. They go up and they play a song and say, this is my next tune, and it's entitled
Block.
This is
my next tune.
Yep. That's great. They're great musicians, but I want to hear, in my head, I've already heard the song and kind of built the backstory.
Yeah.
And most of the time, 99% of the time, it has nothing to do with what the song's about.
A lot of times it doesn't. And that's something that you wrestle with, because sometimes it's better just to make a piece of art, whether it's a painting or a song, and just let people put their own connotations to it, because then it's, you know, it's more powerful for the listener. Yeah. And it's more, it becomes their own.
More personal,
Yeah, where sometimes if I do tell the whole 10-minute story of how I wrote a song and then I play the song, it's like, now I'm not leaving room for people to put their own meanings into it. I've filled in all the blanks for them.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think it's good. I like to hear stories. Like, I listen, I'm definitely inspired by folks like Garrison Keillor.
Yeah.
And folks that you hear on the BBC sometimes where it's like, just somebody like telling a story.
Yeah.
And that is an art form that has waned a bit with everybody looking at their screens all the time. And
because
you need a little bit of an attention span to sit and like listen, even if it's only 5 or 10 minutes of a story, to sit and just kind of like to force your mind to not be distracted. Just listen to that. But it's a very human thing, and it's very fulfilling once you do it. And it's fulfilling to tell stories. It's one of the things that defines us as an animal.
Yeah.
Is that we can do that.
From the days of sitting around the community village fire and hearing the
sitting around the campfire. Yeah, that's one of the very
hearing
best
the village
things to
elders
do.
Tell the history, whatever it happened to
and
be.
And I think the closer that we can live in today, the closer that we can get to like how we evolved as an animal, the more healthy and happier that we are. That's one of the reasons I enjoy living in my bus. They're like, oh, you live in a bus? It's like, well, no, I mostly live next to the bus is the thing. Like all my cooking and everything. But the big thing is that I stay out west. And so between gigs, I go into the national forests or go up in the mountains or down the lower deserts if it's wintertime. And if I had to give up one of the two things, I would give up playing music more than I would give up living outside. And because that has changed my life entirely, just to be just in nature most of the time. Get up in the morning, make my cup of coffee, and go dig a hole, and there you are looking at the mountains and contemplating the there's moss on the back of that rock. Who would think that moss could grow in the desert? But then you realize that rock, that one side of the rock is facing the north, right? Okay, cool, this thing hardly ever gets the sun. And so anyway, just to be in those rhythms and to tell stories, that's a very human thing to do. And I think that that's has waned a bit in our society. I think it's going to come back, and I think that things like what you're doing, the podcast, and that's how it's taking a new form. But I think that's a very, very important thing to do as human beings, and it's one of the most fulfilling things we can do is just connect with another human being by relating our stories and listening to theirs.
Storytelling has, it sounds like, been part of your life from way back. Where you do, is that how you viewed your camera work as well?
Yeah.
When you were doing, what was it, news work?
I worked in TV news for several years as a camera guy.
How'd you get hooked up into that?
I went to school for film and video.
For that. That was your goal.
I didn't know what I was going to do with my life, sort of thing. But I realized that a lot of times when I imagined things in my head, I saw them as if they were shot in a movie.
Gotcha.
Like, over the shoulder shot and then reverse over the shoulder, like when I'm imagining people have a conversation. But I decided more so I want to be into documentary, things that are real, not scripted things.
Yeah.
And so news is where, your entry level job for that sort of thing. And then later in Alaska, I wound up scoring a really cool job working for a native, half hour weekly native Alaskan television show.
Now, how'd you end up in Alaska? Where did you start doing your camera work, your photo journey?
Some in North Carolina, then I had a job in Nebraska for a while, and then I got a job offer up in Anchorage for one of the, you know, it was the ABC News, or maybe that was CBS, I forget, but, now, you know, one of the local
Had you
stations.
Been up to Alaska before?
Once. I drove my bus up to Alaska not long, a few years, maybe about 4 years after I bought my bus. Me and my girlfriend piled in the bus and drove to Alaska. We heard there's a road
to see the wild frontier, huh?
So, yeah, I think we took 2.5 months, drove up to Alaska, around Alaska, drove back down. And it was just, we had just saved up money. So the less money we spent, the longer we got to stay out.
Yeah. Nice. And we were talking before off mic about the cold weather. I'm not a cold weather guy. And when I picture Alaska, I picture, you know, like the movies where it's just blizzards all the time. And then I have friends who have gone up there vacationing and hunting and fishing and stuff. They go, no, it's, you know, I'm looking at pictures going, that's not what I envisioned Alaska. Where's the igloos? I don't Beautiful country, but it seems so raw. And I guess that's
the
draw.
It is the last frontier, yeah. And one of the things I learned living up there is how much easier things are and how many societal problems just disappear when there's not so many people around. And, you know, Anchorage is a big city, about 500,000, but you can get out real quick within, the saying is Anchorage is half an hour from Alaska, which is about it. You drive half an hour, get out of your car and walk up, and you can be in designated wilderness within a few minutes. But as far as the cold and stuff, it's cold. You have to like doing stuff in the snow. Like, I enjoy both kinds of skiing and just general, you know, romping about in the snow. Yeah. And so, yeah, you make it through the winters by doing. They do have a nice winter around Anchorage. Like, you'll get snow. You can go, you know, once you get over the dark hump in the middle there, December, January, where it's just like, oh man, it's just dark all the time. But even then, when I had my lunch break from work, if I was working in the office, I would eat my lunch real as quick as I can, just a can of ravioli or something, and go out on a cross country ski trail for about half an hour, then get back to work.
Yeah,
and just be out in the blue sky, sunshine, because when it's winter, it's beautiful up there.
Get out from under those fluorescents for a little bit.
Yeah, you just got to go out and enjoy it, because you drive to work in the dark and you drive home in the dark, and you just you got to like doing stuff in the snow, but it's a nice place to live.
When did you transition into music full time?
It was when I was up in Alaska, and then, you know, like I said, my girlfriend at the time, she dumped me, and so then I was sitting there, and the story I tell is that, and it's true, I went down to the local brewery, a place where I had gigs. I think I showed up early for a gig one night and went down there, and so they were giving me beer. That's a great thing about playing at a brewery. They're like, well, while you're playing here, we'll just give you beer for free.
Yeah.
And so I was like, well, what time does that start?
Yeah. What is the earliest I can show up?
Yeah. When can I show up?
Cool.
Okay. Drop the sunglasses. Okay. But anyway, I went down there and I made a list like my grandma taught me to do. Like, okay, you know, I could keep my job. I could stay where I'm at in Anchorage. I can, you know, I've got a nice apartment full of stuff.
Yeah.
You know? Or I could go out on the road, because the job I had, they ran reruns during the summer. So I was part of the contingent. Is that July and August, she's like, I got to lay you off for July and August every year. And I said, can I get that in writing?
Yeah.
Which was smart, because later on she was doing better. The business was doing better. Yeah. She had work over the summer. But I'm like, no.
That's my time.
I'm off. I'm out of here. I'll see ya. But so I had these 2 month chunks of time when I was going out my bus and playing music and just being on the road, and I would drive from Alaska down to California, about a month to drive down and a month to drive back up.
Yeah.
Just, you know, and seeing different stuff. And when I thought about those times of my life, I was like, okay, that's what being on the road is like. Okay, I know what that's like. And I know what living here in one place is like. And I made the list, all the reasons to stay here, all the reasons to stay in Anchorage, and all the reasons to go out on the road playing my music. And when I got done making this list, I looked at it. And I read all the reasons to go out on the road, and they were like, you know, mostly esoteric. Freedom, seeing new places, adventure, music, meeting people, new friends, things like that. And then when I, you know, my eye, the camera pans over to the left side, where I had all the reasons to stay in Anchorage, and it was like my couch. My Jeep CJ. Boy, that thing's fun to drive. Okay, and I had an upright piano. My piano, I love my piano. And mostly it was stuff.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wow, freedom, stuff, freedom, stuff. And so I had a garage sale. And I sold most everything I could sell and gave away the rest. And a friend of mine bought my piano for about what I paid for it. So that was cool. And got rid of my stuff, like I say in that one song, and headed out on the road. I still have some stuff. So I'm not, you know, I've got a pallet in one of my friends' houses in their basement.
Yeah.
Sort of thing. And got a pallet for mostly my photos and my vinyl record collection.
So tell me a little bit about this most recent release you got. Title of it
is Road Trip Songs.
Road Trips. How long were you working on the compilation of that?
The song's probably 2 or 3 years. I kind of, you know, the song's typically for me like every, you know, month or so, or every few months, I'll write a song and that one, so it was. And then when the opportunity came along, like, oh, I can make an album. So it was kind of like, oh, pull all the songs out of the old, where's all my notebooks? Get all the songs I've been writing back out and hone them, you know, practice them up and get them ready and see which ones you got to chuck out and which ones you're going to keep.
Yeah. Obviously, a little bit freedom, less gear, things like that. But give me some pros and cons about performing like you are now solo, and then you were with a blues band for a while.
Yeah, I was with the blues band in Anchorage.
What's the comparison there for you?
I enjoy both.
Yeah.
Pretty much equally. It's very logistically hard to be on the road with a band because everybody's got their own thing and their own girlfriends, and they got a dog at home or a job and this and that. So it's really hard. We did do it in Anchorage.
And splitting the money five ways.
Yeah. That is the other thing. The tip jar is often laughable when you're playing with the band. Well, when you're a solo act, you know, there's $50 in the tip jar. You're like, oh, cool, $50. If you're with the five, you're like, well, here's your $10.
Yeah.
You're like, oh, great, cool. I'll buy a beer.
Maybe. Right.
Yeah. But, so actually being on the road with a band is, that's tough. And I've been told that, and it's true, having a band is like having four girlfriends without the sex.
Without the benefits.
Yeah, because everybody's got their own emotional hang-ups and this and that.
You just
got
to rework your band members, I guess.
Yeah. It's Dave Manning and the Harem. Friday night. They'll be here all week. It's three shows nightly. The last show is
going to be really short. We got
to
get back to the van.
That's the one to see. Yeah, man. Well, that'll be a different guy, a tour bus, I guess.
Yeah, that'd be more like what people think of tour buses, I think, back in the hair bands of the 80s.
Yeah, it's not all that. It's not all that. I don't have groupies. And when I do have a groupie, there's usually an age or a weight gap.
I don't know. You had a nice duo that were hanging out at your piano last night.
Oh,
of your groupies, the two little girls that were dancing.
Oh yeah. Someone had their kids.
They were having a ball, man. Yeah, that was fun
I do
to watch.
Enjoy that. And it's cool when kids do that because they don't have the inhibitions that adults do.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's probably, oh, cool. And they're just, I'm like, well, these, what were they? Probably like 7, 8 years old.
Yeah.
Dancing. And I love that. And so, I'll play more. I've got a few songs I know will get the kids moving because it's easy to find the beat. And these are cool. Let's play those. Get them moving. Everybody's happy. Yeah.
On your shows, how much of a mixture between originals and covers? And
it depends on where I'm playing.
Play it by ear?
Yeah. Like the Raven Cafe or the distillery where people, that's a music venue, 50-50, you know, around that. And then if I'm playing, like I said, more of a listening sort of venue where the people came to see Dave Manning play and tell stories, then I'll just throw in one or two covers for the whole show.
Just to catch their ear.
And I like when people compliment me on the cover. Once in a while, someone will come up and say, wow, Dave, boy, when you do cover songs, you really make them your own.
Yeah.
And I'm like,
Manningize them.
I Manning, and I take that as a compliment.
Oh, yeah.
But also, it's just that it's really hard to play them just the way they're on the record. Yeah. I'm not that good. So I just like take the song. I'll just look at the chords and be like, well, here's how I would do that.
Yeah.
And if there's a signature riff or something to a song, like Stand By Me, like I'll try and learn, okay, boom, 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 boom,
yeah,
boom, boom, boom. Try and learn to play that, no, because that's integral to the song. But other than that, like, let my fingers do what they're going to do, how it comes to me, because that's easier. And nice. So that's where a lot of it comes from. But then, yeah, after you play a song for a year or so, it settles in. And then, yeah. Like, oh, this is how I do it. Yeah.
Nice.
But what we were saying earlier about the road trip songs, that mm-hmm. was the idea. That's what that CD is. It's a collection of songs that I think would be great to listen to on the road. Some are upbeat and some are, some are power ballads, I would call them. You know, if it had a full treatment and a full production, it would be a power ballad and they'd be, you know, doing the air grab, you know. That sort of thing. The stuff that's good to belt out when you're driving in by yourself in the car.
When you're on the road, when you're looking at a stretch or highway that doesn't have an end on it, you know, the horizon's too far off. What do you play? What's on your rotation? What are you listening to?
If I've been playing, like if I just get done playing three gigs, then I'll listen to more like podcasts or more talk, less music, because the music part of my brain is okay. All right, I've been using that one a lot, but a lot of times, I guess that sort of thing. The sort of things that I tried to put on the road trip songs album, whether it's stuff that's fun to sing along to in the car. I like listening to that.
Name of you. Or do you got your own going?
I do keep my own albums on my my jukebox, my digital music player thing. But I don't listen to them. Usually, if a song comes up, I'll skip over. I'm like, well, I've heard this one. But a lot of times it's good to, if one comes up that I haven't heard in a few months, I'll listen to it just because I'm like, well, how does this recording sound now that I can hear it with new ears?
Yeah.
Because I haven't heard it in a few months. So that's good. But I rarely like sing along with myself in the car. But as far as like we mentioned Tom Waits, but Bob Seger's a great Bob Seger greatest hits.
For the
that's a great, you know, just shouting it out in the car, and some Bruce Springsteen, you know, that sort of thing, and who else? Some of the great old rock and roll stuff that inspired me. Like my first concert was going to see Dion the Belmonts.
Wow.
And our Chuck Berry's great one, Little Richard, Jerry Lee Lewis, that sort of like stuff that you can sing along, or just like the oldies radio station.
Yeah.
You know,
when you can hit one, depending on where you are.
Yeah.
Sometimes the only thing you can get, especially like between, you know, like Kingman and Needles or going up and down to Vegas, you got either the only ones that come in really, really strong are either Spanish or religious.
Yeah,
and then
yeah.
there's a certain section of highway where all you get is Spanish Jesus. So it's Spanish Jesus.
You know what I often do in that situation, like driving through Nevada and stuff, is especially if it's late at night. I got the old radio in the old bus. I finally got the right clunk over to AM, and then flip around. And if I can find what do they call it, Coast to Coast?
Yeah,
which is the call-in show, and it goes on for like 4 hours late at night.
Was that like Art Bell did?
Yeah, Art Bell did it for years, and now it's been handed off a couple times. But it's always just people call in and talk about their alien abductions and the ghost in their basement.
Be careful, because a lot of those alien abductions happen right on that highway to Vegas.
Well, yeah, that's why it's great to listen to there.
Start looking above.
Yeah, that's right. And what's really spooky and cool about that, cause as you might know from AM, it'll bounce. So when I'm hearing Coast to Coast, it's usually from L.A.
Yeah.
At night, because it's bouncing around in the atmosphere. And then I'll wake up in the morning and I haven't touched my radio, and I'll turn it on, nothing but static. As if,
they were traveling with you.
Yeah. The radio station's no longer there, man. Did that really happen? Whoa,
that's nice. There were certain cassettes that I used to work a lot in San Francisco, and cutting through the city, you know, 3-4 in the morning on the way home. There were certain albums, certain cassettes that I always like listening to. It just kind of set the mood for
keep you
driving through a wet streets with the neon and stuff. Romeo is Bleeding was always one of my favorites.
That's good. I always put Frank Sinatra on when I'm going through Vegas. Yeah. I'll just get off the highway and roll up the strip.
just to look.
Yeah, I'll just put on Frank Sinatra and be
the
like,
old
cool.
days of
Vegas.
The mob right run on. Vegas, everybody in their tuxes.
right on. Yeah.
Nice. So what's on your horizon now? What do you got? I'm putting this up today, tonight. tonight.
Tonight, wow.
So what do you got? What do you got in the next little bit here?
Well, let's see. I'm playing at the Page Springs Winery this afternoon, this evening. So okay. I got to get over there. Playing.
So that was
o'clock.
A great show already by the time this goes
up. Okay. And then where am I playing? Oh, Oak Creek Brewing Company, Saturday afternoon.
All right.
I've been playing there. And they were one of the first places to hire me when I came through, and they still, like the Raven Cafe, have been playing. Yeah. I guess it's, you know, edging up on 10 years I've been playing.
Oh, nice.
Some of these venues, and I do really appreciate that, those relationships, and, you know, good to see the people, and good to see the venues succeeding.
Yeah.
And, you know, good to be a part of it. So, anyway, Oak Creek's like that. It'll be great.
Nice.
To be playing back there again. And then I've got Sunday through Friday off, so I'm going to go camp out in one of my favorite spots out in the desert.
Very nice.
On the lower desert, so nice and warm. And do some. My dad's going to come out, camp out with me for a couple days, do some hiking.
Now, you got family locally, you said, out in the Verde?
Yeah, Cottonwood.
Cottonwood. So is this, you mentioned the other night that this time of year you're kind of Arizona-based a little bit
more.
Yeah,
I try to avoid the winter, stay around Arizona.
So start looking at Oak Creek. Raven, hopefully you'll be back here soon, and just follow you on Facebook and find
Facebook,
out where you're playing.
Yeah. The following weekend, I'm playing in Crown King. Ever heard of Crown King?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. So 26 miles up the dirt road, and that's a hell of a place. But I've, once again, a good relationship. I just started playing there last year, but a great, you know, couple that has built this restaurant with her own two hands, literally.
Well, and that's kind of brings in what you were saying before about, like, a listening venue, because you know, up and down the road, people are popping in for a sandwich, for dinner, for a drink, and there happens to be music on. When you got to go that many miles off of the beaten path, you're going for a reason.
Yeah.
The reason's Dave Manning.
Well, not there. The reason they're there is the beer and food. Beer and food. It's a lot of the off-roader sort of set.
There's
up there.
A lot less distraction. It's not like people are popping in for 5 minutes, grab a drink, and then out.
Yeah, that's nice.
That's
cool. And I enjoy when I take breaks. I've heard of musicians that don't take breaks. They'll just play 3 hours straight. Whoa. But
That's a job, man.
No, I enjoy it. I think it's good for everybody if to get up and walk around the tables. And, you know, if you catch somebody's eye, you can tell, which, you know, like yourself, when you saw me at the distillery, where it's just like, oh, this guy wants to talk to me. Cool, let's chat. And, like, meet people. That's what's one of the side benefits of this sort of work.
Well, hey, thanks for sitting down and taking your time out. I just encourage people, DaveManning.net, and pick up some CDs and find out where you're playing through your Facebook page and show up and buy a CD.
I
know that you have a couple of, I'm trying to remember now when I was on there the other night, you got some samples of audio on the web.
There's definitely samples
so
you can get.
Catch a little taste of what it is, and then above all, get out there and see you live.
And
it's,
if you hit the contact Dave on the website, I've got a boilerplate email that I always send out. If you just send me an email, hey, Dave, appreciate your music, I'll send you back this email that's like, here's all the places you can download my stuff for free.
Perfect.
And I used to do a radio show, so I've got all these episodes of whatever it is, like 24 episodes of a radio show I did about my travels.
Oh, I got to get on there and listen to it.
Those are all for free. So I
went on and got the contact and got the wrong email. So we'll get...
Well,
I like your Well, they're not your business cards. They are my business cards. Your matchbooks.
Yeah, I was going to get business cards printed, and then I was like, you know, I play in bars. And I always thought those little books of matches are really cool, different bars had printed up. So I found the place. I think there's only one company left in Wisconsin that makes all the matches for the whole country now.
For everybody.
Because, not too many people make matches anymore. But it's about the same price. And so, I got matches.
Again, the latest CD.
There's Road Trip Songs, and I've got three CDs out, and they're all available. The links are off the website, thedavemanning.net. You can purchase them through a site called CD Baby that does a lot of independent music.
Well, good. Thanks again. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
I don't want to take up
great
your whole day.
Above all,
get out and see Dave Manning live.
Come see me. Come shake my hand.
Good
I'm a friendly guy.
Thanks. Well, that was it. Thank you, Dave Manning, for sitting down and talking with me. Don't forget, DaveManning.net is where you can pick up your own copy of Road Trip Songs, Vincent Rolls, or Mobile Home Girl, or all three of them. Get all three, and you can also sample some of his music. Again, DaveManning.net. Don't forget to visit The Raven. And, of course, we are brought to you this week by BarkBox, a million belly rubs for your pet with every delivery. You get a free month of service when you sign up using the code MILEHIGH. That is right there at the MileHighShow.com website, or go to GetBarkBox.com/MileHigh for your free month of making your dog happy. Thanks for tuning in. We will talk at you next week.